around the world with reporters. Scotland is at a crossroads yet again. A historic election that'll set the course of economic recovery and possibly open up a path towards independence from the UK. But this election, too, divisions among the voters persist.
I guess what we're looking for is a little bit of autonomy from Westminster, says the English person. We're looking for better healthcare.
Positive change for everyone.
Big one for me is about the referendum. I don't want to go down that route again.
First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, whose Scottish Nationalist Party looks set to win, says her priority, first and foremost, will be the economy, but that if voters give her the mandate for another referendum, she won't hesitate.
I think it will unleash a permanent crisis. I mean, the growth of the SNP, the appetite for independence, although we didn't secure a majority during in the Ref 1, it doesn't show any sign of diminishing to any great extent. The numbers go up and down by 1 or 2 degrees. It's something which is almost permanent.
Parties hoping to scupper that plan, the Conservative, Labour and Liberal Democratic, who wish to stay in the UK. The SNP have been in power for more than a decade now, and they haven't exactly received praise for their performance in health and education, for example. But Nicola Sturgeon's response to the pandemic, her handling of the health crisis, has made her a popular leader, leaving many voters to forgive the SNP for their less successful performance in those other areas. If the SNP doesn't achieve a majority, Sturgeon could need to enter a coalition with other pro-independence parties for another referendum to become possible. Her next hurdle would be approval from British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who hasn't minced his words.
This is not the time to have a reckless and, I think, irresponsible second referendum. We had one only a few years ago.
The first independence referendum was held in 2014. Europhile Scots voted to remain part of the UK so they could stay in the European Union. But then came Brexit and changed that calculus. Now they're seeking re-accession, and the only way to re-enter the bloc is to exit the United Kingdom. Saeed Pourriza, Edinburgh.
The Palestinian National and Islamic Forces Committee in the Gaza Strip held a protest to support Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem al-Quds, where dozens of Palestinians are illegally displaced from their homes by force. In a press conference held during the protest, Palestinian leaders called on the international community to end this eviction that aims to demolish the Palestinian cause.
The apartheid policies and the displacement of Palestinians from their land is totally rejected by Palestinians. We stress that we won't allow the Nakba and the land grabbing that happened in 1978 to be repeated again. We are calling on the international community to stop these violations. We also call on all Palestinians to get united in order to end all Israeli conspiracies against Palestine.
Palestinian resistance in the Gaza Strip expressed solidarity with people in Sheikh Jarrah and held the Israeli regime responsible for the consequences of this move. In a recent statement by Hamas military wing, its leader Mohammed Daif warned that Israel will pay a heavy price if attacks against Sheikh Jarrah continue.
The message of the Palestinian resistance to the Israeli regime for these violations against our people is clear. Jerusalem al-Quds is our red line, and the resistance won't allow such crimes to go unpunished. The Israeli occupation will pay the price if the eviction in Jerusalem al-Quds continues.
As observers say, Palestinians are forcibly displaced from Sheikh Jarrah to make way for Jewish settlers. The Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah have been stepping up their campaign to save their families from eviction in recent weeks.
We are supporting our people in Jerusalem al-Quds. The current displacement of Palestinians is totally illegal, as those are the real owners of this land. This move aims to demolish the Palestinian cause and expand the Jewish settlements. The Israeli occupation should be held accountable for these crimes.
Similar rallies have been held by Palestinians against the eviction across occupied lands.
People here stress they are all united in defending Palestinian rights, and they won't remain silent over the illegal displacement of Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
The Palestinian cause between interaction and disappointment is the slogan of this symposium held in the Great Mosque of Yemen's capital Sana'a to raise awareness on the importance of the Palestinian cause among Yemenis. A number of state officials participated in the symposium.
The International Quds Day is an important occasion to remind the Islamic nations of the Palestinian cause. We call on the Islamic world to take steps to liberate Al-Aqsa Mosque from the Israeli occupation amid the continued acceleration of some Arab regimes to normalize ties with the Israeli regime.
The participants affirmed that the Palestinian cause will remain the central issue of the Islamic nations despite the betrayal of some Arab regimes. They said Muslims should get united to help Palestinians to liberate their territories from Israeli occupation, especially the holy city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
For the Yemenis, the Palestinian cause is not restricted to the Palestinians alone. As Imam Khomeini said, we should prepare ourselves for the military step to eradicate the cancerous gland of Israel from the region.
The International Quds Day was initiated by late founder of the Islamic Republic to express support for the Palestinians and oppose Zionism and Israel.
Yemenis believe that the Palestinian cause is a global issue that requires all the free people of the world to stand by the Palestinians until the liberation of their occupied lands. Abdul Latif Al-Washali from the Great Mosque of Sana'a.
International Quds Day is an event to express solidarity with Palestinians and oppose the Zionist regime. The day is observed by demonstrations around the world on the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan. Muslims and non-Muslim communities hold rallies each year in different cities across the world to mark the occasion. Last year, Quds Day was held in Tehran and major cities like Mashhad by a procession of cars. People could attend Quds Day rallies by riding in their cars, but this year, as the situation is more critical, no rallies in person or in cars will be held. Here is a model of the Quds iconic mosque built in the holy shrine of the 8th Shia Imam Ali ibn Musa Reza in Mashhad. The dome is built to show solidarity with the oppressed Palestinians.
After the last day of month of Ramadan was named Quds International Day, we built this structure here in the holy shrine to show support for the Palestinians. This structure is 8 times smaller than the Dome of the Rock in the occupied territories. Many of our programs to support the Palestinian cause are held over here.
We also talk to some people who are called Khadim or servant. They give service to pilgrims without getting any salaries. These people have a vow with their imam to serve the pilgrims.
I've been working here for more than 32 years in this court of the shrine. I do remember that after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, this structure was built here, and since then, people hold cultural activities to show their anger at Israel.
Before the spread of the coronavirus, cultural events like exhibitions, art shows, seminars, conferences, and roundtables were held in this area, which is called Quds Court, to show solidarity with Palestinians. However, this year, to comply with the health protocols, just some restricted programs will be staged in the Quds Court of the Holy Shrine. Quds International Day is an annual event held on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. It was initiated by the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, to express support for the Palestinians and show anger at Zionism and Israel. Uman Abedi, Mashhad.
The coronavirus pandemic has spread throughout the world, killing over 3 million and infecting over 150 million people worldwide from all different backgrounds. While the virus does not discriminate, people in the Western world do.
I was walking in the park and people might shout at me like coronavirus or something. So, but like, I would say, like, It's a bit unfair to blame everything on Asians. The conceptions around coronavirus wasn't clear why it happened, so people just wanted to blame some people, and I think that's kind of unfair to like Asians.
In major cities in the US, anti-Asian hate crime has increased by 146%, and in the UK, there's been a staggering rise of 300% in hate crime against Chinese, East and Southeast Asians.
Flagrant racism of the Trump regime, Trump and Pompeo talking about the China virus and the Wuhan virus and the Kung flu and so on. All of these tropes, racial tropes, related to the coronavirus that were basically about the US administration trying to cover up its own complete uselessness when it came to containing the pandemic.
But when you look at the coverage in the mainstream media outlets in both the UK and the US, it becomes clear that the demonization of China goes much further than the Trump administration.
Very obviously linked to the escalating Cold War against China. If you look back two decades, the war on terror, the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, that happened at the same time as this massive rise in Islamophobia, in anti-Muslim racism, which really peaked in the early and mid-2000s, just at the time when we were destroying Muslim countries in the Middle East and Central Asia. So, of course, there's no coincidence. You know, racism is never a coincidence.
As long as Beijing continues to grow and threaten the West's economic dominance, it's likely that the UK and the US's hostility towards China will continue, which could be bad news for East Asian communities living in both countries. Ahmed Kabella, London.
It is estimated that prior to the pandemic, 27 million people worked in the EU's hospitality sector. Small to medium-sized firms are described as the backbone of the 27 nation bloc's finances. The Eurozone economy has contracted further and is now in a so-called double-dip recession. Citizens in Brussels have been sharing their thoughts.
It's impossible to stop everything. You know, the corona is there, the economy is dead.
Like waitresses or waiters, and they lost their jobs, so they are in a bad condition now.
Me too, like I work and my work is impacted of the coronavirus.
It's very difficult to have hope because we don't know how it's going on, and we don't know what the future is made.
More and more workers lose their jobs, like restaurants.
Members of the European Parliament say the EU's aviation and tourism industries need emergency assistance.
Businesses in the hospitality sector are on their knees. They need not just financial support, but also longer-term measures to restart and recover. The tourism may never be the same.
Lawmakers say the EU's vaccination rollout is too slow. Just 10% of the population have been fully vaccinated. They are also highly critical over a lack of joined-up thinking when it comes to implementing COVID-19 restrictions. Governments were supposed to submit applications to the European Commission for recovery funding by last Friday. So far, just 14 of the 27 have done so. There is concern that the process lacks transparency.
We have encouraged all member states to make the submitted plans to the Commission public. But again, it's up to the member states to decide what they wish to publish.
An unprecedented social crisis might be on the horizon for the EU. It's possible the millions of jobs that have been lost so far only represent the tip of the iceberg. Several studies have concluded that up to one quarter of small to medium-sized businesses in the EU will go under once restrictions are lifted and government supports are taken away. These are firms that employ 250 people or less. Clearly, then, we're talking about huge numbers. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Turkey prioritizes Libya's integrity, sovereignty and independence. This is what Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu told his counterpart Najla Almankoş in a statement made after his visit, along with Defense Minister Hulusi Akar, Intelligence Chief Hakan Fidan and the Chief of Staff Yaşar Güler to Tripoli. During the meeting, Almankoş urged Turkey to help implement a UN Security Council resolution demanding the retrieval of foreign fighters from Libya. Cavusoglu responded to the remarks by saying that Turkish troops and mercenaries sent by Ankara were deployed in Libya as part of an agreement made with the previous administration and were only present for the purpose of training.
In the face of the attacks on Tripoli over the past years, the legitimate government of Libya invited some countries, including us. Only Turkey replied in the affirmative to this call. Turkey's support for Libya prevented a civil war and human tragedy.
This visit is seen by many as very important for Turkey to maintain good ties with the new Libyan government and make sure agreements are not broken due to political changes in Tripoli. However, it seems that the new government does not welcome foreign troops anymore.
Turkey signed an agreement with the central government in Tripoli, which is recognized by the UN. Based on that agreement, Turkey sent troops and mercenaries to Libya. Unless that agreement is broken by any or both sides, Turkish troops will continue to be present there. Turkish forces are not alone there. There are also Syrian fighters, Chadian army, as well as Russian. Their presence must also be questioned.
Turkey also signed an agreement with the previous Libyan government on maritime boundaries in the Mediterranean, which created tensions between Turkey and Greece. Ankara sees a great importance in maintaining good relationship with the Tripoli amid mounting tensions in eastern Mediterranean. Libya is still considered Turkey's strategic partner. For Turkey, the visit meant to make sure things are still going well after the new Libyan interim government was sworn in. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Palestinian journalists in the blockaded Gaza Strip held a sit-in to mark World Press Freedom Day. World Press Freedom Day is observed annually around the globe on the 3rd of May as a reminder that freedom of the press is a fundamental human right. Israeli forces killed and injured hundreds of Palestinian journalists over the past two decades and haven't been held accountable for their crimes. Currently, 16 Palestinian journalists are being held in Israeli jails, including four under administrative detention. During a press conference, the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate demanded an end to Israel's impunity.
Palestinian journalists are subjected to Israeli aggression, including killings and arrests, almost every day, whether while they are covering the news or even inside their workplaces. Journalists are constantly threatened by Israeli forces. Such Israeli attacks and threats amount to war crimes, and we have reported these crimes to the International Criminal Court.
Israeli violence against journalists includes physical and verbal assault, as well as degrading treatment. Observers say the Israeli regime forces aim to keep journalists and mass media away from covering their crimes.
The silence of the international organizations has encouraged Israeli forces to further violate the rights of Palestinian journalists. All international press unions and syndicates must stand by Palestinian journalists and exert pressure on Israel to stop its immoral and illegal practices against journalists.
Israeli forces attacked several Palestinian media offices during the last three wars on the Gaza Strip. Since the beginning of 2020, Israeli forces carried out over 200 attacks against Palestinian journalists.
Over the past 4 months, Israeli forces carried out more than 217 violations against Palestinian journalists and media offices throughout the Palestinian territories. The attacks happened despite the protection that journalists enjoy under international law. It's crystal clear that Israeli attacks on Palestinian journalists are deliberate and systematic.
Experts say Israeli forces will continue with their violations against journalists as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye.
On World Press Freedom Day, journalists demand international protection. Palestinian journalists risk their lives on a daily basis to cover the news and expose the brutality of the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Iran says substantial progress has been made in several rounds of Vienna talks between Iran and their remaining signatories to the JCPOA. Speaking at an online press conference, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh told reporters the Islamic Republic of Iran wants the removal of all sanctions on the basis of what had been agreed upon in the nuclear deal.
The negotiators have come up with two drafts so far, but there are still differences that need to be discussed. The Islamic Republic wants the removal of all sanctions on the basis of what had been agreed upon in the JCPOA. Iran would verify the sanctions removal since those measures have deprived Iran of its JCPOA benefits. The remaining parties engaged in Vienna talks are also concentrating on the way the U.S. could return to the deal.
Regarding the statements by Iran's top negotiator in Vienna, Abbas Araghchi, who suggested that a list of sanctions on individuals and on Iran's energy, auto, financial, insurance and port sectors have been agreed to be lifted, the foreign minister's spokesman said all sanctions under different labels should be lifted.
A red line is that all sanctions reimposed and those imposed under different labels must be lifted. There has been agreement on many issues, but there are also disagreements. Developments are significant and good, but it's slow in some areas.
Officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the nuclear deal has survived almost 3 years of unilateral U.S. sanctions on Iran since the former U.S. administration discarded the accord in 2018. Iran, in return, reduced its own commitments as a tit-for-tat by adopting a stepwise suspension of its nuclear commitments. Iran and the remaining signatories to the nuclear deal have held several rounds of talks in Vienna to discuss how the U.S. should return to the JCPOA.
The Iranian officials say the path is clear. The U.S. must terminate all its anti-Iran sanctions before Tehran returns to full compliance. Otherwise, Iran will simply quit the talks.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For thou art Allah, the best guardian, and thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
The debate.
People in many parts of the world have marked International Quds Day. The annual occasion, which is held in solidarity with Palestinians, seeks to shed light on their suffering under decades of Israeli occupation. The occupation of Palestine is probably the longest-running violation of international law and systematic violation of human rights. In a speech marking Quds Day, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, underscored the enduring significance of the Palestinian cause. On tonight's debate, we'll discuss this issue.
In a speech marking International Quds Day, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution underscored the enduring significance of the Palestinian cause, saying it remains the most important and vivid issue for the whole Muslim world. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the oppressive and cruel capitalist system has driven a nation out of their homes and denied them their ancestral land, and instead installed a terrorist regime and housed foreign people there. The leader said there is no logic more flawed and perverse than the Western-promoted rationale for the creation of the Israeli regime. Ayatollah Khamenei said since the first day of its creation, the Israeli regime has turned the occupied Palestinian territories into a terrorist base, and so it behooves every Muslim to counter the scourge. Ayatollah Khamenei said despite the desperate efforts of Israel and its patrons, particularly the U.S., the downward spiral of the Israeli regime is already in motion and will never stop. The leader said Muslim nations must rally around the Palestinian cause of liberation from Israeli occupation and aggression. He cited two significant factors which determine the future. First and foremost, Ayatollah Khamenei said, is to continue resistance inside Palestinian territories and reinforced a trend of struggles and martyrdom. Second, he noted, is the support by Muslim governments and nations around the world for those fighting for the cause of Palestine. Ayatollah Khamenei concluded by highlighting a widely accepted democratic and progressive initiative to settle the issue of Palestine, a referendum with the participation of bona fide inhabitants of Palestine, regardless of their ethnicity and religion. However, the leader warned that Palestinians should not give up their legitimate and moral fight against the occupying Israeli regime until it's forced to give in to this demand.
Well, joining us on debate, we have Sheikh Mahdi Taib, founder of the Al-Aim Seminary, joining us from Mashhad. Also, we have head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Mr. Masood Shajada, who's joining us on the line, if I'm correct, from the British capital. London, let's start off with Sheikh Taib. Sir, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, says the Israeli regime is on a downward spiral, and also Palestine, it remains the most important issue for the entire Muslim world. Please elaborate on the comments by Iran's leader for us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's good to be with you guys again from the holy shrine of Imam Rida in Mashhad. It's important for us to know the reality of the regime of Israel today, how it has started and how it grew and how it reached this level that we see today. Israel has become has reached the weakest stage that it has experienced the last 60 or 70 years. The Palestinians who have been fighting with Israel throughout the existence of Israel after they established that occupied system, oppressor regime, Palestinians were fighting with Israel using stones and just going to the streets and shouting against them. But today you see that Palestinians are shooting missiles against Israel, and they're still not showing their full capacity and power. Today, the countries around Palestine and the people of this region and the people of the world have become more and more aware about the reality of this corrupt and oppressor regime. So on one side, what we have is the people of the world and the people of the region and the people of Palestine and Palestinians themselves being more aware of the reality of this regime. And on one side, the weakness and the corruption of the system and of this regime within itself that's collapsing and falling apart in and of itself by different groups fighting with one another. What the Israelis are trying to do is to hide the reality of the division that's taking place between different groups and parties in Israel. That's another factor. So on one side, we have Palestinians who have become more and more powerful. On one side, we have the people of this region, the people of the world, who've become more aware of the reality of this oppressor regime. And from the other side, what we have is the weakness of Israel in its system. So when we combine these two factors together, we see that Israel is going down, and we will see the downfall of Israel soon, inshallah.
Mr. Shajada, over in London, International Quds Day, it provides an opportunity for people around the world to express support for the Palestinian cause. How important is a day like this to raise awareness about the Palestinians and their stance against the Israelis and the ongoing illegal military occupation in Palestine?
Extremely important. I mean, the fact is this, that unfortunately, the illusion that has been created by the Zionists, because they have extreme self-control and influence on the international media, and indeed even on the politicians. So what illusion they have created is that they are the only democracy in the region. They are civilized, and indeed Palestinians are barbaric. But I think this illusion is fading away. The reality is that more and more people are waking to the reality of the brutality of the apartheid system. And, you know, we are getting even organizations like the Human Rights Watch identifying Israel as an apartheid state. And their influence is only present in the elite and the government. Ordinary people are really awakening to this. I mean, right now, I'm coming back from a car and open bus double-decker rally in London. We went all around London. And you should have seen the responses of ordinary people in the street. They were so supportive that it was amazing. And this is really what is happening, not just in the streets of London, but it's happening in the United States. It's happening around the rest of the world. And despite the fact that they have managed to get some dictators in Middle East to be supportive of them, the reality is that ordinary people are waking up and becoming more and more supportive of Palestinians. And there is a recognition. You know, every poll that has been taken in the recent years, asking people which country is the greatest threat to humanity. And always, Israel has been identified as the number one. So really, I think this is very important. But I think at the same time, it's important to recognize that they are trying to normalize themselves. They're trying to use normalization, not in among the government run by the tyrants and the dictators, but also they're trying to present themselves as a respectable religious group. And the fact of the matter is overwhelming Orthodox Jews reject Zionism as something which nothing to do with Judaism. And I think what we need to do is apartheid system and ideology as they are.
Sheikh Tayyip in Mashhad, Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that opposing the Israeli regime is tantamount to opposing oppression and terrorism, which should be a collective responsibility for everyone. Unpack that statement for us.
Well, what we see in Palestine is a clear crime taking place every day, an injustice and oppression every day. The existence of this regime is injustice in and of itself. A number of rich people gathering from different European countries and going to a country and buying some lands and then forcing others to obey them through the power of their money and guns, and then killing them every day on a daily basis. So this existence is a form of occupation, and this occupation is injustice in and of itself. And this injustice is growing day by day. They're getting more and more aggressive day by day. Let's not forget that if we are silent today, if we don't say against the oppression and injustice that's taking place and aggression that's taking place in Palestine today, they will come for each and every one of us in every corner of this world. It's not such that, okay, it's an injustice taking place in Palestine in a limited land, and it's not going to, reach out to other people in the world. No, it's going to reach out to everyone, to each and every people all around the globe, if we don't put in a stop and an end to it. This is the reality of oppression and oppressors. Oppressors won't stop if you don't stop them, if you don't force them to stop. And we need to retaliate. We need to start. Those who have the space of writing, they have to write. Those who can speak, they have to speak. Those who can make art, make music, do whatever you can, through whatever possible means that you have, to show the people of the world that this is the reality of this regime that's beautifying the ugly face and that's hiding the ugly face of its reality in telling the people of the world that we have democracy here. The only thing that you don't have in Palestine is democracy. The solution that the leader of the Islamic Revolution offered is that let the people of Palestine, all the Palestinians in the world, those who are living in Palestine, inside Palestine, and those who were forced to leave, those who were expelled, to vote. Let them exercise their choice. Let them vote, regardless of their religion, regardless of anything and everything, let the Palestinians come and vote and decide for their own countries. If they wanted this system, they can have it. If they wanted to change it, they can change it. And they will definitely change it. They've been fighting against the oppression and aggression of this regime. So the people of the world
right.
have to wake up. The people of the world have to get united. Today, what we need is a unity against Zionism
sure.
and imperialism. And this unity is happening. We're getting more and more united, as Mr. Masoud Shajara said, what we see in London today, which is the capital base where everything started, the support for Israel started from London, from the British government. They supported them. They helped them to establish that oppressor
right.
regime. What we see today is that people in the streets of London, despite the fact that they know it's going to be dangerous for them going on the streets and shouting out against the regime of Israel, it will be pricey for them. But they go there, they don't care about if the MI6 or God knows what services, intelligence services, they see them and they
Indeed.
Take their pictures and they go to their houses and rape them. They go there, they call for justice, they invite the people of the world to see what's happening and taking place in Palestine, in America, and all around the world today. And
right, I'm going to bring
I
in Mr. Shajad now. Stay with us,
to join.
Sheikh Taib, Mr. Shajad in London. This Al-Quds Day comes at an interesting time as it coincides with the Israeli regime's forceful evictions of Palestinians from their homes in Sheikh Jarrah in East Al-Quds. That's happening as we're speaking right now. How can the Israelis carry on with their land grab and settlement building policies, all of which we know are illegal under international law? Is it the U.S.'s support that has emboldened the Israelis to this point?
Absolutely. I think the fact of the matter is that the support of U.S. and indeed the Western world has made it possible for them to carry on the level of brutality and the level of crime that they are committing, not just right now, but, day in, day out, 7 days a week, 360 days a year. And the fact is that it is up to us, and we know the solution is that the masses need to speak out, because unfortunately the leadership of the Western world is not going to sort of intervene. They haven't intervened in any other injustices that takes place. So I think this is very important that we as a people need to rise up. And I think the significance of the Ayatollah Khamenei's speech today was for two things. One is the destroying this fallacy of civilized democracy in the region. To destroy that, to stop it, and the solution has to be a solution which is by mobilization of masses and mobilization of ordinary Palestinians, and the way that we will all come together to address this thing. And if we do that, indeed we will see the disappearance of this last apartheid system which exists, and I think once that happens, then everyone in the region and everyone in the occupied territory could actually begin to put their lives back together, and we will see another sort of end of another atrocity, as we saw what happened in South Africa with the end of the apartheid there.
Sheikh Taib, back to you. You mentioned earlier the issue, the importance of unity in the Muslim world. Controversial stances and policies by some Arab states have made the struggle of the Palestinians much harder now, namely the normalization agreements between some of these Arab states with the Israeli regime. Have the these Arab countries effectively turned their back on the suffering of their Arab brethren?
For everyone, that these so-called leaders are not the real leaders of the Muslim world, nor the Arab world. The people today, they know the reality of these so-called leaders. So when we speak of the Muslim world and the leaders of Muslim world, we know that today the people of the Muslim countries, Muslims all around the globe, They've started to realize the reality of these faces that they see on camera here and there, those who speak good but do bad, those who practice differently from what they say. These leaders are puppets of Israel and the United States of America's administration. So the people of the region, Muslims, have realized this. And the only thing that's kept them in power here is their money and the force of their military that they have. So this is the reality of the leaders, and people of this region know it. So when we speak of the support of the Muslim Ummah and the leaders of Muslim Ummah, those who've named themselves the leaders, obviously they don't support Israel, and they try to normalize relationships with Israel and to accept and embrace this new entity in this region. But the people have never accepted the existence of this oppressive regime. Let me tell you something. If the time comes for the final battle between the people of the world, not only the region, the people of the world and the Israeli regime, you see the real unity that's happening today at that time. At that time, you will see people from London, people from America, Washington, D.C., people from Michigan, people from Europe, from France. Everywhere you see people from Asia, you see people from Africa who will stand up and will go to fight with Israel. This is the reality that will take place.
Very well.
But let me tell you something. We won't get there because the Israel is going down itself because of the divisions that they have, and the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the power of the resistance line in this region will end Israel, and inshallah, will free and liberate Palestine, inshallah.
Okay, sorry for interrupting you there. We are running short of time on tonight's program. Let me thank my guests, founder at the Al-Qaim Seminary, Mr. Sheikh Mehdi Taib, joining us from Mashhad. Also thanks to head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masood Shajara, joining us from the British capital, London. Also, special thanks to you for staying with us on this debate. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In what Palestinian observers and advocates call a glaring example of settler colonialism in action, a video circulating on social media recently shows a Palestinian woman confronting an Israeli man who admits he's trying to steal her family's home in occupied East Al-Quds. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Brett Wilkins Ryder. This article is titled, "An Israeli Man Trying to Take Over Palestinian Home Says, If I don't steal it, someone else will." Stay tuned for the details, please. In what Palestinian observers and advocates call a glaring example of settler colonialism in action, a video circulating on social media recently shows a Palestinian woman confronting an Israeli man who admits he is trying to steal her family's home in the occupied East Al-Quds. According to Al Jazeera, Palestinian activist Tamer Maalada recorded a footage of the exchange between Bona Al-Kurd and a man with a North American accent named Jacob, whom Al-Kurd knows because his family has already stolen half of her home. Jacob, You know that this is not your house, Alker tells the man in her backyard, who replies, what's the problem? Why are you yelling at me? I didn't do this, the man insists. It's easy to yell at me, but I didn't do this. Alker then pleads, you are stealing my house. Jacob replies, and if I don't steal it, someone else is going to steal it. Alker then protests that no one is allowed to steal it. In what other words, if not apartheid, are we to describe the reality in Palestine? According to Al Jazeera, half of the Alkert family home was seized by the Zionist regime settlers in 2009. Mona's twin brother Muhammad previously told the outlet that the family has been sharing the property with squatters with Brooklyn accents in a situation he described as insufferable, intolerable, and terrible. They're just sitting in our home, tormenting us, harassing us, doing everything they can to not only force us to leave the second half of our home, but also harassing our neighbors into leaving their homes as part of an effort to completely annihilate the presence of Palestinians from Al-Quds, Muhammad said. Al-Kurd's home is located in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Al-Quds, which has been illegally occupied by the Zionist regime forces since 1967, and where Zionist settlers have been seizing Palestinian homes with state support. Last March, a Zionist regime court in the occupied city ordered half a dozen families, including Al-Kurds, to leave their homes so that Jewish settler colonialists could take possession of them. Dozens of other Palestinian families in the neighborhood live under the constant threat of eviction. The inherently unjust system of Israeli regime's colonial courts is not considering questioning the illegal settlers' ownership and has already decided on the family's disposition, a statement from the affected Palestinian family said, according to Al Jazeera. The video's publication follows an April 27th report from the U.S.-based group Human Rights Watch that accuses the Zionist regime of crimes against humanity, including apartheid and persecution. It also follows the publication of videos showing rampaging mobs of far-right Israelis attacking Palestinian people and property in East Al-Quds. The fake regime of Israel was founded largely through the theft of Palestinian land and the ethnic cleansing of more than 700,000 Arabs from their homes in 1948 and 1949. Over 400 Arab villages were destroyed or abandoned. Their residents, some of whom still hold the keys to their stolen homes, were never allowed to return, despite a United Nations resolution guaranteeing the right of return. The Zionist regime cabinet minister Moshe Dayan acknowledged in a 1969 speech that we came to this country, Palestine, which was already populated by Arabs, and we are establishing a Jewish state here. Jewish villages were built in place of Arab villages. You do not even know the names of these Arab villages, and I do not blame you, because those geography books no longer exist. Not only do the books not exist, the Arab villages are not there either. There is not one place built in this country that did not have a former Arab population. hundreds of thousands more Palestinians were ethnically cleansed from their homes during the Zionist regime's seizure of the West Bank, Gaza, and East al-Quds in 1967 Six-Day War.
From the heart of beautiful Iran, IRIB English Radio.